Who's on the line?
Hey, it's Joseph Kahn.
Is this really Joseph Kahn?
This is Joseph Kahn.
Hey, what's up, man? Thanks for calling in. We're doing a
I called.
Wow, this is so cool. Holy shit.
We thought people were...
We're used to people duping us and mocking us.
What's up? You wanted to talk? Let's talk.
Well, we just want to thank you for calling in. We're doing a stream-a-thon right now. How many hours? We're about 4 hours into our 30-hour stream. So we really appreciate you taking the time out. We saw you were making a Korean snack. What snack was that you're creating?
It is just rice. It's just rice.
I just glanced at it. I'm sorry. I guess that was the joke.
It's this Korean delicacy. It's called rice.
I'm sorry. We're in the middle of broadcasting. I just checked to see if you tweeted recently. I guess that was the joke I completely missed. So let's start out with a question we ask everybody. Who are you beefing with right now?
Who am I beefing with? I'm not beefing with anybody. I'm just, I don't know. I don't have any enemies. I really don't.
But aren't
you? I don't think I do.
I mean, you're kind of like a bad boy indie filmmaker. Yeah. Although, I mean, also like an amazing music video director. But it seems like, you know, you don't pull no punches with when it comes to like the Hollywood, you know, not calling people out. But does that just work in your favor where you don't have any enemies by doing that?
Man, I don't really know what the, you know, Hollywood thinks of me, to be honest with you, because I'm not really part of that system. I just do my thing, you know? And so, I mean, maybe that's why I'm not directing Marvel movies or something. You know? I don't know. I'm in a weird situation because I think a lot of people, when they go into that particular system, they have to obey the rules because it's how they make their money, you know? And if you piss off the wrong people, which that talent definitely, you can do that and you can be instantly out of the business. And I'm kind of dealing with that right now, not on me, but with someone else that I know. And if you're kind of like in that system, then you have to play by the rules or you will get completely screwed out of it. But I have something that that they don't, they can't control. Like I have money, you know?
Yeah.
So because I make so much money doing, you know, commercials and music videos, I don't really need Hollywood, you know? So I don't have to beg them for work. If they don't want to give me work, then I just don't work. I'll just do my own thing.
So you're not beefing with anyone, really, but people are beefing with you.
I have no idea if they're beefing with me. I don't really care.
Nice.
I'm just doing my own thing.
And that's the way to do it. Well, because also from an outsider's perspective, so is it that separate? Because I was actually going to ask that. For people that don't know, if you're in the chat, Joseph Kahn, he made the movies Bodied, Detention, of course, the classic Torque, which I don't know why Torque is in the Fast and Furious era right now with the multiple sequels.
Yeah.
But so is it that separate where you could make, because I mean, you're a pretty prolific music video director. That doesn't really interfere where like someone looks at your film and like, oh, this is a little too controversial. I don't want you making my video.
No, not at all. Because I think the record industry and the film business are two completely different ecosystems. They're so completely separate, you know? And when I hopped over into the studio world, I was actually quite shocked because the people that I'm used to dealing with, the executives, are actually quite cool, you know? Like, if you're a record company executive, yeah, you're kind of douchey at times, I guess, you know? And some of those things that you see on all those rock biopics, it's true. These guys party, they do drugs, you know, they have orgies, whatever the hell's going on. I've seen it all, right?
Yeah. I mean, you worked with Blink-182.
But then when you hop over into the studio world, those people are really square. They really are. They're not cool in any way whatsoever. they come from business school. They have MBAs. Like, people in the record business don't think that way, you know? And these guys are super conservative. It's a completely different world. And they play these weird corporate games where they don't tell you the truth. And people say in the record business they don't tell you the truth. Well, what they lie to you in the record business is the amount of enthusiasm they may have for, like, your song. You know, they may over-exaggerate how awesome a song is, and they do that sort of head dance that we all do when we listen to a song a little bit too much. But the stuff that happens in the film side, it's this weird sort of intellectual gamesmanship of trying to justify your thoughts on plot or characters or whatever. And they don't, they sort of speak like human beings. You think it is, but what you realize is that they're really trying to find consensus, and they're like, one organism, and they're trying to find which organism they are at any particular point in order to bully you into doing whatever the hell the organism wants. And they're just trying to identify what that organism is. And that seems to be the main preoccupation with a lot of the film side of it. Whereas on the music side of it, it just seems to be a little bit more gut instinct and kind of like anything goes. So, no, they're two completely different like things. And so if you fail at the film side, you can still have a record career, like 100%. It has nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's awesome to hear. Now, you kind of don't have much fear on social media that I feel like other people do, or other people, I guess, in the industry. Is it kind of an extension of that? Like, I mean, sometimes you might get some shit from like Taylor Swift fans or stuff or something like that from some of the things you tweet. Is that ever a thought of like, quote, being canceled or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, of course I could get canceled, and anybody can get canceled.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a very dangerous thing out there, and it's getting, frankly, worse. And I made a movie about it called Bodied.
Of course, we love it.
And thank you. And I feel that I have become more reserved in terms of even how I sort of interact with Twitter. It's interesting. Like, I don't think I'm actually telling a lot of the truth on Twitter these days anyways, because why bother, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you fooled us with your snack.
Yeah, you tricked us.
Well, I mean, my level of untruth is still more truthful than everybody else, quite frankly, you know? But what am I really thinking? Sometimes I'm writing more in code these days, you know? And I think smart people will know that I'm writing in code and they know what I'm talking about. But I have to write in a way that I go past the sort of angry teenagers that keep fucking trying to cancel me, you know?
Yeah, and kind of like what you're saying, so even like the reserved version, it's still edgy kind of in this climate. So like even that, people kind of are like, ooh, that's a little close. So, you know, does that ever come up? Or, like, I guess since you've been making videos for so long, people already know you well enough. So do things like that ever get in the way? Like you said, it is its own ecosystem, but do you ever, like, push the edge with that? Or people just know you and it's just kind of like, oh, no, that's Joseph. We trust him. He's got a vision. Let's go for it.
I think that I have to be respectful on a certain level to my clients. You know, like, if I'm doing commercials for major corporations and big artists, I can't necessarily be the wild child that sort of draws a lot of terrible attention to them, you know?
Yeah.
It's not my business at this point. Like I'm there to sort of sell a lot of records or sell a lot of product, you know? So if I'm going in there and just fucking up the works and drawing really terrible attention to them, it's kind of a negative. But at the same time, I can't like just walk a tightrope all the time. I don't have the answers, guys. Like,
yeah,
I'm just sort of playing it by ear. And right now I'm saying whatever I generally want to say. But I'm being a little smarter in terms of, not getting myself fired off, a giant $3 million commercial or something, you know?
Well, you mentioned like Marvel movies or something like that. Like, is that still something from your perspective that you would go for, or do you even not see yourself in that realm? You just like kind of being able to make your own things.
You know, 3 years ago, I would have without hesitation go, yeah, absolutely. I'd do a Marvel movie. You know, I would have the biggest conflict I had was trying to figure out like, how could I keep my voice as a filmmaker and execute, you know, my stuff under that system. And I felt like, you know, there's a version of me that can do that because I do commercials and I'm not necessarily like doing personal statements when I do these commercials. Every shot I do is being filtered through agency and clients and test marketing. And literally like, you know, you do 13 shots in a commercial, every shot of those 13 shots has been completely filtered through a system, you know?
Yeah.
So I know how to work within that particular system. But the thing about a commercial is that I'm only on it for 2 weeks when I'm shooting, you know, like a Marvel movie, you're on it for 2 years. So, like what do you feel like as an artist at the end of 2 years? What growth have you done? And quite frankly, has it impacted you in a way that did you waste 2 years of development of your time and suddenly not become a better filmmaker at the end of it, you know? And, you know, cause like, I remember like going to film school And I could have taken the whole 4 years, but I realized that the 4 years could have been done in like literally a couple months. And that's what I did. I did a couple months, took every course I could, then dropped out. I didn't need to wait 4 years to learn the lessons of film school. And so do I really need 2 years to learn the lessons of a studio movie? And that's what's more important to me about like my growth as a filmmaker. Am I accelerating at the speed that I want to? And am I learning things? And, you know, if I take 2 years, 2 years is a significant amount of time, guys. It's the fifth of a decade.
Yeah.
And and if you waste too many years, before you know it, you're old and you look back and you go, what did I do with my life? And so I'm always highly conscious of that. So that was my perspective of in terms of the conflict I had 3 years ago. Now, the difference now is that I have a 2-year-old girl that I, you know, a baby that I love and a family that I love, you know, and the entire idea of taking 2 years away from her. And not getting to see her turn into a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old or 6-year-old for something that I'm not that passionate about and damaging her life, that is now a new part of the equation that never existed before, you know? Mm. So I'm now hesitant in terms of taking big chunks of my time away from my daughter. And I know JJ felt that way about on Star Wars. That's the reason why he wanted to turn down Star Wars. And as a single man, I didn't understand how that can happen. But now as a married man with a family, I completely get it. You know, like there's other things that, that take priority over that stuff. So I'm in a beautiful situation right now where I can hop onto music videos and commercials and whatever I want to do. And I can still see my daughter. If I do a giant movie, you know, it's all the same sort of existential ideas in terms of like growth that are still there. And on top of it, I'm taking time away from the one thing that matters to me.
Oh, absolutely. And so in that same respect then, because like, you know, you mentioned that you have money and you've put your money where your mouth is when you've made your own films like out of the system. So does that take away from the idea of like gambling like that of like putting all in a project, or, you know, are we still going to be a few years away from another Joseph Kahn project, or it just kind of depends on how things go?
Well, guess what, guys? I only do like one film a decade anyway.
Yeah. Are we another 8 years away still, or what are we talking?
Wait till your daughter's 10 and you don't care about the 10 to 12 period. It's like, that's when you go make
the
a
tweens.
Movie.
Well, I don't know. You know, having a family now definitely puts more of a squeeze in terms of what I do with my money. I don't want to gamble my money to the point where I can't send my kid to college, you know? Yeah. So, there's that. I wish there was a way for me to make these things without having to put my own money into it, but also have all the control at the same time. And that is a hard thing to do. The reason why I even have control to be able to do something like Detention and Body and Power Rangers, because it's money that I'm putting up now, not necessarily money I have. A lot of times I'm borrowing it against, you know, personal loans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And other investors coming in and then I owe them that particular money. But the benefit of it is that I can do whatever I want and no one can tell me anything, you know? And so I don't, you know, there's an interesting thing where I don't think that the world quite understands what those movies are, in that they are completely uninhibited. Like Detention and Bodied are exactly what I want to make. There is no compromise whatsoever. There is no situation in the world where most figures can just do whatever they want and that's it. And that's the final product. And also, and let's be honest, I have a skill set that is beyond most filmmakers. I know this, you know, that's why people pay me a lot of money to do these commercials and music videos, because I know how to shoot things and make things look better than anybody else. And instead of doing that and giving it to a Marvel movie or some studio thing, I've decided to take my own money and do it for myself, you know? And so it's not a matter of like, oh, he just made, you know, one of those crappy independent movies that are kind of like half-assed. No, they're super polished, super professional. They have a vision, and they're executed by one of the top technicians in the world, me, you know? And I don't think people quite understand what those movies are, that they're super risky. They're super insane, and no one else can do them but me. And, you know, if I die right now and all I've made was Detention, Bodied, and even my short Power Rangers and stuff like that, I feel like I'm already in the history books. People don't know that yet. Maybe after, you know, I die, they'll figure that out. But I know what I did, you know? So, you know, if I ever do another movie, it's got to be for a reason, you know? It's got to be for a reason. Otherwise, I'm wasting my time, money, and my family's time.
Absolutely. Well, because there's a breakdown of, I believe, like the first 10 minutes of Bodied where you do a commentary. And Like if people in the chat or whatever haven't seen that, I highly recommend it because yeah, you explain it all out, all the thought and the way the shots were put together, and even to the extent of like, it's not like you had a lot of coverage because you knew exactly what you wanted. And as you said, you don't have someone kind of over your shoulder, you know, with their own recommendations or trying to give their own input. But does that ever get daunting, or, you know, do you ever feel like, oh, maybe I do need another eye on this? Or are you just kind of that confident or like a Superman going through and just like executing?
No, I feel super confident. I feel like I think about my craft more than anybody else, you know, like I put so much time every day thinking about how to improve my craft, what the craft is, how a shot works, how to make a shot better, what a dolly is, what a camera is, what subjectivity is, you know, all these little sort of nuances. And I know when I have material that is personal and I've absorbed it and it's coming out from a true place, it always comes out great, you know? And that's true for music videos as well. Like, that's why I feel like my music videos are better than my commercials. My commercials are definitely better than my TV shows and stuff like that. It's funny, like, a lot of commercials I do, I don't think are as that good because they are filtered that process and it becomes more academic for me. I'm thinking more intellectually and making a mosaic that other people can like smash and put together how they want, you know? And when I do like the personal projects everything locks in exactly as I want, it's like literally just taking what's in your head and heart and putting it out. And that's true art. I have seen, for instance, myself do television shows, and I've done that as an experiment. I did like two episodes of Sweet Fishes. I did Crazy Ex-Girlfriend episode. I did something for my friend Brian Taylor for Happy. I did an episode of that, you know.
Wait, which episode of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend did you do?
I did season 3, episode 4, where she goes crazy and she starts stalking her boyfriend. And
oh man, I didn't even know you were involved in that. That rules.
Yeah, thanks. I think there's good stuff in there, but when I watch all those TV shows, I'm karaokeing, you know, I'm pretending to direct for other people, you know, and I try to engage as much as I can, but because there's always this sort of pressure to hit the schedule and not block the actors a certain way and not infringe upon the show's visual style and not, you know, rock the boat too much, I restrain myself and I'm finding pockets in individual scenes and shots to sort of flourish and do things. But as a collective whole, it doesn't feel like me, and therefore it doesn't feel in totality like I did anything, you know? And that's a very disappointing feeling every time I do one of those things. Like, I don't feel like I've actually done my best work. The beautiful thing about those particular projects, though, is that I did take things out of it. I learned how to work with other people, and I learned what TV shows are like, and it's all a fascinating thing, and learned how to use other people's writing and stuff. But ultimately, on a deep intrinsic level, it's so unfulfilling, and it doesn't feel like I'm actually directing, you know?
Yeah, because like you said, it's more like a showrunner or basically matching up with the rest of a series rather than bringing in like your own vision.
Absolutely. So, you know, that sucks. But, you know, I will tell you that I have written a lot of scripts in the meantime. For every script that every movie I make, there's like 10 other scripts that I've written, you know, just for fun. And some of these would blow your mind if I actually made them. But they're fucking impossible to make.
You gotta yeah. Make them.
We're daring you to make one right now, bro.
We're waiting for them. Now, were our tweets annoying? I mean, I guess you called in, so it wasn't too bad, huh?
No, it's cool. It's cool. I'm waiting for my rice cookie to cook. So I was like, okay, yeah. I'll talk to you guys about that thing. Because I'm going to get that rice cookie, then I'm going to watch The Untouchables. That was my plan tonight.
Oh, hell yeah. So how much time we got on the rice cookie? How much time we got left?
I don't know. My alarm will beep probably in like, you know, 10, 15 minutes or like
All right,
that.
Cool. Here's another question that we ask everybody, and the chat's asking for it. So now when it comes to porno, do you prefer like gonzo, like scene, or do you want like a storyline?
Oh, God. So I'm a married man now with a family. So sex is not important to me anymore. But I will tell you, before I gave up sex and all that stuff, you know, it got to a point, actually, you know, as a younger man, you just care about the scene and the whiz bang of it all, right? The close up and the particular act, right? And then as you get older, what I found is that it's interesting. Never in the condition of human beings has the male species been able to have access to as many like sort of sexual acts to visually watch. It's not natural, yeah. You know, it fucks up dudes. And I feel that's why the birth rate is so low. That's why I feel like, that, you know, the interrelationships of people are just completely off. They're just like guys now are just getting satiated and on a weird level, it's completely demolish society. I really feel that, you know,
they're not into Gonzo. They don't want to just have sex.
Well, no, I agree. And never mind just someone who's in their 20s or 30s, just kids growing up that have always had it. Just the norm. It's what they're used to, just at the click of a button.
I actually had this conversation with another friend of mine. I actually think whatever the hell porn has done, it's actually made the modern female not as attractive to me than, like, say, the girls from the 80s. I feel like the girls from the 80s, well, maybe it's because that's the time at which I became interested in sex and stuff like that, you know, growing up in puberty and stuff like that. So I actually liked vintage porn.
You
know,
yeah.
Like, nice, dude. I like it.
Let's go.
Yeah, it's got that nostalgia factor. Because it's got
that film grain.
Yeah,
on it.
Exactly.
It's like rewatching Jurassic Park or Hook or something, but it's porn.
Yeah,
it's
I don't like the late 80s stuff, which I should be more interested in because that's when I was like full on teenager because they switched to video and it just felt like a little too immediate. But that era in the early 80s that where it was like shot and lit and on film and there's a kind of like there's a distance to it because it's like kind of soft looking, you know?
Yeah.
And it's scored to music, you know, and they're actually trying to act and pretend they're into each other and there's stories and like that. And also there's hair, you know, like,
yeah.
Like with magical hair and it was actually natural. It was like growing out of assholes and shit like that. You know? like that to me was exciting, you know, and if I were into porn, that's what I'd be into. All this other stuff now is fairly uninteresting to me.
And so that's definitely storyline then. Like that era is the era of a story. I mean, there's still storyline.
If you were to ever have watched.
Yeah, if it were the case.
What a thoughtful breakdown of pornography.
Jesus, yeah, it's a great answer.
That's why we have such a good question.
and I mean, you tweet about crypto a lot. Is that, are you going to roll out an NFT? Could that be the idea to get the financing for the next film?
I don't know. I was thinking about, like, should I try to do the NFT thing?
No.
Like a rice cup.
Don't do it.
I don't understand NFT still to this point. Like, no matter what argument anybody has, I still don't see why something is worth $69 million or something you can get for free, you know?
Yeah.
In a closed ecosystem, I think they make sense. But in an open ecosystem, I think they stop me. Like, if you're a video game and you're doing something or you're a weird app, like fake trading cards, like there's a world where you can picture like digital card games are essentially a weird version of NFTs in a lot of ways. But the second you open the ecosystem to just like a world where someone can click
like a meme
and get the thing, then that's when it stops making any sense. And I just don't understand what people are doing.
Well, look, I'll give you a little background in terms of finances for me. Okay. I'm Asian, okay? So, I'm an immigrant that came to America. My mom's a waitress. My dad's a mailman. You know, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So the entire idea of money was always interesting to me. I'll be completely honest with you, you know, because I didn't have it as a kid. And I always thought as a kid, wouldn't it be great to have $1 million one day? And that was my goal from 8-year-old Joseph. I want to, because I'd heard it from my parents. Asians, by the way, are fucking greedy. That's what we are. You know, we don't come to and start studying to be a doctor just to save people. No, we study to be a doctor so we can make a lot of money. That's the whole point of being a doctor or a lawyer or any of that stuff, you know? Like, you know, if one thing Asians know about America is it's the easiest country in the world to succeed in. Because you know what? You know what it, all it takes to become, you know, a 100,000-aire here in America? Do you know all it takes? You know what? All you have to do?
What?
And make an A. Give me a fucking break. Well, you come here, make an A, you're going to get into college and then you're going to get a good job. And maybe you're not going to make $1 million right off the bat, but you'll get enough that you'll blow away whatever your parents were making, you know? So no, like the sort of part of me that's Asian that says go make money has always been there, you know? And so before I even started filmmaking, You know, it was this calculation about, will filmmaking make me rich? You know, because if it wasn't, I was not going to do it. You know, I don't come from that sort of Western perspective of just do it and then fulfill yourself and be poor. Fuck that. That's not the way I was going to do it. So, you know, that's why I made an actual calculation to go into music videos, because having no connections in the business, literally nobody I knew, music videos were the cheapest way to get into the business, and it seemed like an actual business I could start. And that's how I started. I started making a business out of music videos, and I climbed my way up from like literally $40 videos to $100 videos to $2,000 videos to $100,000 videos to million and $5 million videos. I mean, it was a business decision to do it that way. And it was a business decision to stay in commercials. It was a business decision on every other level. And then after I did Torque, which was my studio version of going into it, and I really realized that was a losing battle, you know? Like, when I went into Torque, you know, I was a kid, and I was a kid at that point, making a shit ton of money, and then they paid me so little money for 2 years worth of work. Like, literally, I went into it fairly wealthy. I'm telling you, by the time I finished Torque, I had $300 in my bank account.
Jesus.
I was about to lose everything, you know? And the movie bombed, and at the end of it, I was like dead broke and scrambling to try to pay my bills, you know? And I said, I can't ever do that again. It's just like, it's ridiculous. And here's the dirty secret in Hollywood. The vast majority of filmmakers, even the successful ones, are broke, you know? They don't pay directors that much. They pay movie stars a lot. They pay maybe showrunners, I guess, these days. But those day-to-day directors that do movies, imagine if you're a hit director, right? Like, if you're a hit director, you made maybe 2-3 hit movies in a row, right? Mm-hmm. And your first movie, you didn't get paid much. Your second movie made $1 million maybe. And your third movie, maybe you get something out of it, you know? But then that means you had a decade of being the top director in Hollywood. And then the next decade, most likely, you're not going to have that career anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So the vast majority of directors don't even get to that level. They end up in TV, and TV pays like shit for directors. It's absolutely fucking horrible. So the vast majority of directors don't make that much money. So it's always been a calculation for me in terms of how to manage my finances in order to be as artistic as I can. You know, I purposefully went in to make a lot of money at my business so then I could take the money and be as artistic as I want when I choose to be. You know, I don't have to be the artist on every single job. Some jobs are paydays. Some jobs are exchanges. But I'm flexible to be as artistic as you want me to be, or non-artistic, or provide the service or whatever, as passionate as you want to be. But ultimately, it's an exchange. And then I've done it in a way where then I can just take the money that I make, and then every once in a while, once a decade, I put into something I truly 100% like am passionate about. And that's the way I sort of justify it and have designed my career.
Well, I think that's great, because it's like, you have, like, they tell a lot of filmmakers, say, if you want to be a filmmaker, you can't have a fallback. You got to go all in. And it's like, you kind of had a fallback, but your fallback was still filmmaking in a lot of ways, or it was like, you were still in the business. So it's not like you're like, you know, hey, if this accounting doesn't work out, you know, if this filming doesn't work out, I'm like, I'll always be an accountant or whatever. So I think that's a very smart, like, angle to come at it with.
Well, the second part of it has been that the money that I did make, I invested. You know,
yeah.
The worst investments ever made were in the movies themselves. Those were the passion plays. But whenever I did have the money, starting from a very early age, I always invested in stocks and properties and all that stuff. And now crypto and all that. And I do feel that you have to see yourself as a director as running a business, because you literally do incorporate as an S corporation for tax purposes. And you have to take all the money that you have as an asset class, as an investment class. And you have to figure out how to like pump up that money, and then that money becomes power. You know, if you don't have the money, then you are a bitch. You are literally going to do whatever anyone else says, because it's a drug that they feed you, and they know they can control you with it. So learning how to do stocks and investments and crypto and real estate and all that stuff, that is literally the most important thing I think sometimes a director can do in order to retain independence.
Hmm. If I take anything away from this conversation, it's that Joseph Kahn is smarter than like anyone in the world. It's kind of insane.
That's great. Now, have you ever caught yourself being like too Hollywood, and you're like, whoa, slow down, Joseph. You're being a Hollywood douche. Or would you just bask in like, yes, I've made it. I'm a Hollywood douche.
you know, I've never really, you know, it's the funniest thing. When Torque came out, people always accused me of being this Hollywood douchebaggy music video director, and I made this, like, douchey Hollywood, like, whatever, like, Fast and Furious film, but I was literally, I really was just making fun of the whole thing, you know?
What's great about that is, sorry to cut you off, because I was going to say, on Torque, I did see it in the theaters, and I did laugh at it the whole way through, but I didn't realize till later I was laughing with you. Like, I did think I was laughing at the movie, and then I realized, like, oh, shit, no, of course he was in on it.
It seems obvious. Yeah. It's kind of weird that was, I mean, maybe it's marketing or whatever, but it seems obvious to me if you watch it that that's what's happening.
Yeah, I was younger at the time. What can I say? But I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't really know what you're doing when you're doing something, you know? Torque was made by a much younger version of myself and quite frankly, a much angrier version of myself. And you have to understand, the person that made Torque was an extremely pissed off dude, you know? And I was pissed off that people were telling me what to do on it. Like, I had just come from music videos where I was God and I could do anything I want. And then all of a sudden I walk on set and they're literally faxing me new pages every day and telling me to direct this. And I hated the lines. I hated, the story. I hated everything I was working with. I hated the producer who kept lying to me, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, like, when I went into it, I came with the attitude of, fuck you. I'm going to make you the fuck you film, you know? I'm going to take everything and squeeze it to the maximum. I'm not taking the shit they say seriously. I'm poking fun at it. And so it wasn't that it was consciously made as like, this beautiful parody. It was the director came in there with a bad attitude and took every scene and twisted it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and then people are like, you sold out. You made all this money. You're like, no, it ruined me.
Like, for instance, like, one of my favorite jokes in it is the product placement stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's so much Pepsi in there. And it had nothing to do with the studio. Studio didn't care about Pepsi. Pepsi didn't care. Like, all it did is that I tried to find one product, and I just kept repeating it over and over. And I don't know why I did it, because I thought it was funny. You know? And I just kept putting Pepsi in every fucking scene. And then at the end, I have this thing where I actually wanted the final battle between there's the Mountain Dew sign. It was originally, I wanted Pepsi and Coke, you know, like between each other. But it was all Pepsi products, so they forced me to use Mountain Dew. So it's fine, whatever. But it was less intellectual in terms of what I was doing, but it was like this sort of, you like this sound, I'm going to give it to you more and more until it becomes fucking annoying, you know? So I was just repeating this visual thing as kind of a fuck you.
Oh, that's great. Now, are you in Los Angeles? Are you in California?
No, I moved out.
And that's what's I was going to ask if you were going to flee like everyone's fleeing, so I guess that's the answer. You've already kind of head out, huh?
You remember that whole speech I just made about understanding your finances?
Yeah.
and doing it. When COVID happened, you know, I immediately had the second part, the CEO of Joseph Klein Enterprises, looked at the year ahead, you know? I made some really good stock moves, you know, immediately started buying a shit ton of Tesla stock when I was dropping. I looked at different things, and then I realized at a certain point with, I had a few things that I had to try to figure out, but once the Democrats came in and they were going to take over, and it was clear that Trump was going to lose and the Democrats come in, I didn't know completely, but as soon as the Democrats won, I fucking fled LA. Not that I hate the Democrats, not that I love Republicans, not any of that shit, but just on a pure practical level, taxes are going up,
Yeah.
And in LA, if you know anything about the way taxes work in LA, it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal, you know? So, as it came out today, you know, when they talk about Biden is going to raise capital gains taxes to 43% to 48%, you know,
yeah.
And that's before the raising federal income tax to 39%. You add those two numbers together, it's 90%, dude.
Yeah.
So there's no way I'm going to be able to make money. And when they talk about, you know, only rich people, well, I'm that person. I'm being honest with you, you know?
Yeah.
There's no way for me to make money at 90% taxes. So it was a matter of survival to move out and in order to continue to do what I'm doing, you know? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't think you're going to answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. What's the cat embodied? What is the cat to you?
What is the cat to me? I actually don't know what you're talking about because I've never seen this cat that keeps talking about.
Oh, you haven't seen the cat in the movie that pops up sometimes?
Nope. Never.
Dude, you should watch this
movie. You should watch Bonnie. Oh, Bonnie's really good. Have you not seen it?
He's always drinking a Pepsi.
Dude, it's great. There's a scene where the cat's in the stall, and then it kind of isn't there, or it, like, appears there. But I was just wondering. I figured you weren't going to answer, but I had.
Well,
to
he
ask.
Hasn't seen it. Yeah, if you end up familiar. Seeing the movie, can you like hit us back up and let us know what you think?
Yeah. All right, dude, guys. I think okay. I'm burning my rice cooking.
Okay.
Now.
No. One last thing, as you're heading out, just give. Go ahead and just give a message to all your haters.
I don't have haters. I love everybody. I don't know, man. I think it's a weird thing that anybody would even take the energy to hate on me because I'm so lovable.
You know? I agree.
It's true.
You proved it today. We really appreciate you calling and spending some time with us.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate it. It's very cool and great insight, great interview. Thanks, man.
Guys, all right.
Have a good one.
Later.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Holy shit.
That was awesome.
Best dude.
That was fucking cool.
That was great.
How long was he on for? He was on for a while, yeah. Right?